Hello, and many thanks for downloading the Culture Club podcast. I'm Anne-Marie Minhall, sitting in for Charlotte Green, and this week my guests were the composer Will Todd and the actor Jake Gyllenhaal. Jake, first of all,
Yes. You're
very welcome to Classic FM. A pleasure to have you here today. I want to start by asking you something about the challenges, both physical and mental, in filming Southpaw. How were both of those for you in getting ready to do this?
Well, early on, Antoine Foucault, the director of the film, said he wanted to shoot all the boxing films as if they were live, as if they were actually a fight, that he wanted to cover the fights like an HBO fight or a Showtime fight. So the reality of the style of filming was a bit terrifying to me because I didn't know how to box at all. And so I realized over time, not that I was afraid that I couldn't learn how to look like a boxer, but that I wouldn't really feel like a boxer somewhere. That takes years and years, and I was afraid that wasn't going to happen. So I spent 5 months, two times a day, really learning the mechanics and the techniques of boxing. And over that 5 months, really learned as best I could how to be slightly graceful in the process, and really changed my mentality, not only for the character, but also just in life, you know. So I would walk into every scene. I would train every day, even after we finished the boxing sequences. I'd train every day to walk into scenes that were just emotional scenes or regular scenes, to really feel that feeling of being a boxer. It was very important to me because that is essentially his identity.
What do you think it is about the sport which attracts not only movie makers, but also audiences? Boxing films are legendary in the cinema.
Yeah, I mean, there are many made. There are definitely few that are fantastic. And I think it's really, I mean, ultimately the metaphor. I think when you're in that ring, you're in there alone, and people talk about that a lot. And I feel like it's an interesting metaphor for life in general. And the depth sort of that a boxer has to go to in order to train, in order to ultimately to succeed in one way or another, is painful physically and mentally. And it's full of sacrifice. And I think it does mimic life in many ways, you know. And I think there's something about being pushed to that limit that everybody can relate to.
Would you say at the heart of Southpaw is the theme of redemption plus trust?
I think there are a number of things. I think definitely that those two ideas. I think it's really a story about a father and a daughter, you know, at its core. It's about a young man who had a daughter very early, trying to figure out how to grow up himself in order to be a parent. Very simply put, to me, that's what the movie's about.
I was interested to read recently that you had said sometimes what draws you to play certain characters is having a doubt somewhere in your ability to take that role on.
Yes.
How so?
I think there's the challenge of being able to pull something off, whether it be a role or, you know, a skill, whatever it might be. I think that fear is fear can promote courage, obviously, but it's a great motivator in a way. And I also think I'm not interested in doing my job to stay in the same place. I think there's a real opportunity with my job, as absurd as it can be, to really learn about, you know, life around you in particular. And I do think it can really breed empathy. And I think the things that frighten you, you know, it's a safe space as an actor. You know, it's very different than reality in a certain way, but it really can teach you about reality. And I think facing those fears, whatever they may be, even if they're small, is really important.
You're about to head back to the stage in New York for Little Shop of Horrors. So
yeah.
I want to ask you about how that feels, taking on that role, your first musical. I know it's not the first time you've sung, but in terms of music as part of your career and as part of your life, how important is that to you?
I would say it's my priority and it's my primary, I would say, motivation at times, and in a lot of ways, inspiration, particularly when I'm working. But it surrounds my life. You know, I've sung since I was a kid. My family is very musical, and I consider most scenes in particular to be very rhythmic. I think instinct within a scene is very rhythmic, and I think there's a melody to every scene. you know, it's maybe not always the same, but you can find it. And if you're working with a musical actor, one who really understands certain rhythm or has a sense of rhythm themselves or even loves music or sings or plays music themselves, it's a different feeling. You're exchanging in a different way, much like you probably would as a musician, but it's using a similar instinct. So it, to me, music is a huge motivation. And in fact, many of my friends are musicians, more so than actors, and they're a great influence on my work.
Do you play anything? Did you grow up learning to play an instrument or singing or, you know, being in a choir or going to see bands or concerts?
All of those things. I grew up playing a bit of piano and guitar and then singing with my family. And I was in a choir for a very long, competitive one when I was all throughout high school, all the way up into college. And so, and then have always sung. And then I do go to live shows as much as I can. And yeah, like I said, it's all really all around me all the time. And it's been underneath, it's been the subtext of much of my work. And now with something like Little Shop of Horrors, I sort of bringing it up and back into the textual world. So we'll see how that goes, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Extracts from the Academy Award-winning film score to Brokeback Mountain, written and performed by Gustavo Santaolalla, here on Classic FM. Now, when I met Jake Gyllenhaal recently, I discovered that film music is one of his passions, and I asked him just how it can alter the mood and the tone of a movie.
Absolutely, it can alter it. I think it can enhance, it can alter it. I think it can destroy it. I think it can, it has a massive influence. And I think there's a subtlety to movie scores or not, depending on, you know, the theme in general or the feelings that are sort of pervasive throughout the structure and storytelling, that when accompanying a story can be extraordinary. You know, I think we live in a world where I think people feel like they have to sort of cater to people's feelings. I don't feel that as much. I feel like we have really smart audiences, and that particularly with score, you know, more subtlety is even better than, you know, some. But I'm a huge fan of many composers, and there's some composers that have composed music in my movies or other movies. I mean, since I was a little kid, I was a huge fan of Carter Burwell and his score for Miller's Crossing, which I love. And, you know, someone like, you know, Alexandre Desplat, who I think for A Prophet, you know, that score is extraordinary. And I love Johan Johansson, who did music for a movie that I was in called Prisoners, which, you know, I think he's amazing composer. I mean, I think these sort of the realm in which I, composers that I love. And what's interesting about that to me is how filmmakers and composers work together, because, you know, Carter Burwell works with the Coen brothers a lot, and his music is such an integral part. Just as, for instance, someone like Roger Deakins, who's a cinematographer for the Coen brothers, works with them a lot, and you can feel all of them working together in this way. You know, he's composing different parts, obviously, Mr. Burwell is, but he is a part of some kind of symphony, which is fascinating to watch. So I love movie music very, very much.
When Southpaw hits our cinemas, not literally, obviously.
The one soundtrack I would say is that James Horner, who composed the soundtrack for Southpaw, his score for a movie called Searching for Bobby Fischer is probably, like, the, in my opinion, one of my top five favorite scores in movies. Yeah, a very underrated movie and one of my favorite films. And his score is one of the reasons why it is. So when I heard that he was doing the music for this, it was really an honor.
When Southpaw is released, we will also have the release of the sequel to what you have said is one of your, if not your favorite book, To Kill a Mockingbird. How are you feeling about this sequel coming out? Are you going to be queuing overnight to get a copy, or leave it for a little bit, or maybe not even read it at all if it's going to shatter kind of what you like about your favorite book, if it may not live up to the original?
Oh, I believe in artistic expression in every possible way. I don't think it's possible to really destroy anything that is really honest and true, which is To Kill a Mockingbird just originally. And I'm so excited, you know. I think it'll be fascinating to get into the mind of, you know, Harper Lee and see at that time, apparently, when she wrote this book, where she was. I think the passage of time will probably have done an amazing thing to these words, and I can't wait to read it. So I am one for artistic expression in whatever way, even when I don't like it. You know, I'm a proponent that I think that everybody should be able to express themselves in whatever form, and should be able to be agreed and disagreed with. It's absolutely essential to being alive.
An absolute pleasure to talk to you today, Jake. Thank you very much for your time, and every success, continued success with Southport, and also, of course, Little Shop of Horrors.
No, thank you so much. Thank you.
This is The Culture Club. It's Sunday afternoon. I'm Anne Riemann Hall. It's Classic FM. And I'm delighted to be joined today by the composer Will Todd. Will, welcome to Classic FM. I've been a big fan of your music for many, many years. And so it's an absolute joy for me to meet you today. And I want to find out a little bit about how you got into composing and about your choral background, because you're very good friends with our very own Alexander Armstrong, aren't you?
Indeed, yes. I've known Alex since we were children, and we were at school together for a while, and he's been a great friend. In fact, we used to make a lot of music together, composing and sort of trying out ideas. I remember with Alex sort of creating little songs, and, you know, he's got a beautiful singing voice. I've done a number of recordings from when I was a teenager with Alex sort of singing songs that I would write. So he was actually someone who was part of the early bit of my composing life, if you like. I suppose I started with the piano, and I still have the piano. It's my starting point. I love playing the piano. It is said that from age of about two, I used to just get on the piano and hammer it and play stuff. And I remember thinking what a fantastic toy this was. It was like the ultimate toy, where you could press notes and notes came out, and then you press them in different combinations and you get different effects. So I guess by trial and error, I was kind of thinking about harmony and how more than one note, you add another note and you get a different effect.
What kind of composers and what kind of music, Will, were you influenced by and inspired by, and indeed still today, you know, that you turn to sometimes and think, do you know what, I just need to hear a little bit of that man's music or that woman's music today to alter the mood. What were your major influences?
Very broad, and I've a big thank you to my mum and dad for that, because the listening in our house was very broad. My mum loved listening to operas. Pop music was constant with my older sisters, who were always listening to Radio Luxembourg. So that was going on. And my dad, a big jazz lover. So really incredibly broad. And I still, in my listening, like to keep it broad. To give it an example, last night I was listening to Shimonovsky Third Symphony, which is sort of early 20th century, astonishing sort of mix of chromaticism. And then a bit later on, we were listening to Whitney Houston, who I adore.
Brilliant.
So there you are.
Well, I've picked some of your pieces to play this afternoon on Classic FM, Will. The first is called Stay With Me, Lord. And can you tell me a little bit about the story behind this piece?
This was commissioned by Genesis Foundation, who have had a long association with commissioning music, and they currently support the Genesis Young 16, who are part of the 16, the choral group. And their founder, John Studinski, wanted to commissioned some music around this prayer of Padre Pio called Stay With Me, Lord. And he had the idea of commissioning three composers to set the same text. Now, my setting was composed in the way I always work, which is sitting down at the piano, and the idea came really very quickly, which is why it's got this kind of flowing feel to it. But, I mean, the sentiment of Stay With Me, Lord is such a wonderful sentiment that, in a sense, it's very easy to be inspired.
Will Todd's Stay With Me. Lord Nigel Short was the man in charge of the English Chamber Orchestra and the choir Tenebrae. Can I ask you quickly, Will, about Tenebrae? Because this is a choir that you've worked with extensively. What for you makes them such a unique choral group to work with?
Well, they're very, very flexible. They're brilliant musicians and they're brilliant singers, but they will do whatever is thrown at them. Add to that, Nigel is just a wonderful interpreter of music and gets a great sound out of the choir. I mean, as a composer, you couldn't ask for more.
Let us move on to your current project, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Actually, a revisit, because this premiered a couple of years ago, but returning to Opera Holland Park in London this year, a family opera. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this, because I mean the story is just, I mean it's wonderful, but it's madness.
The story is wonderful, but it's challenging to create a piece of theatre out of it. And I think the reason for that is that the wonderful original books are highly episodic. So they're great episodes that are full of fantastical things and events. But in terms of a narrative and a line, it sort of doesn't go very far. So one of the big challenges with that when I started working with Opera Holland Park on it was, how do we make Alice have some kind of a quest in Wonderland that as both adults and children we can really follow it and get to a point where we get to a conclusion. So without changing things particularly, we've constructed a narrative sort of over the narrative that's there, where she's on a quest to, in a sense, save Wonderland from its madness and to bring the evil queen to her senses. And they all, in the end, decide that it would be better to have a cup of tea rather than being vindictive with each other.
Yeah, always a good plan.
But it's been a wonderful, wonderful project to work on. They've just brought out the CD of the opera as well this month, and third season with them working on Alice. It's just been a wonderful collaboration. Opera Holland Park, a fantastic opera company. Everything they do is good. And to work with them on this has been delightful.
My second choice of a piece of music by you, Will, this afternoon, another favourite of ours here at Classic FM. It's from your album released last autumn, Lux et Veritas. It's called No More Sorrow. And again, is there a tale behind this tune?
There very much is a tale. My daughter Rowan has been unwell for a number of years with a brain tumour. And she's had a lot of treatment, and we've been through difficult times with that. And we've had some wonderful support on the way, notably with the Rainbow Trust, who have supported us. And this song was one of those moments where I was thinking about Rowan and I was thinking about this text, and I literally went to the piano and the whole song just emerged in a single improvisation, if you like. And not every song you write is like that. Sometimes you're sort of, it comes out in bits and you sort of gradually weave it together. But this piece, I think perhaps because of the sentiment of the words and the emotions I was feeling, really just poured out of me, and I knew it had to go on the album.
An absolutely beautiful piece of music called No More Sorrow, composed by Will Todd, who's with me this afternoon on the Culture Club here on Classic FM. On piano, James Sherlock, and we heard the voices once more of Tenebrae and Nigel Short conducting the English Chamber Orchestra. Well, Will, following on from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, what else are you working on at the moment? What's on the horizon for you?
Lots of exciting projects. I'm just completing a new jazz mass for Portsmouth Cathedral, which they're going to be performing in the autumn.
A jazz mass?
A jazz mass. Well, there's already my Mass in Blue, which is quite a big jazz work. This is a smaller jazz mass, which they've commissioned, which I'm really enjoying. So I'll be able to use my jazz trio plus the voices at Portsmouth Cathedral. Also doing a really exciting project with the Bach Choir, who have a fantastic outreach programme with schools in the London area, and they do an annual concert with them, and next July they're going to be performing a new piece that I'm working on now, which will have the main Bach choir, the youth choirs from all over the place. I think there's 10 schools that we've got them from, accompanied with my jazz trio and percussion. So that's a really exciting project.
And what do you like to do as a composer? What's your MO in terms of spinning plates? Do you like to have lots and lots of things on the go? I mean, something like Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, do you have to clear the decks because that's a huge, obviously was a huge project? Or do you like to have lots of different things and think, oh, I'm going to work on that today and I'll do something on that next week?
What I find is it's good to know that I've designated a day to a project. And that way I can say, I think this piece is going to take about 10 days. You know, perhaps for a shorter piece. And I've marked those in the diary. But what I also allow myself is if I go off-piste into a different idea for another piece that might be coming up on the horizon, I totally go with that idea. So I designate the day, but I allow myself to wonder if there's good ideas, because a funny way that the creative mind seems to work, you often get the idea you don't need, you know, when you work on something. And I think it'd be foolish not to take half an hour just to think about that and write it down or record it so it's ready to go. So I try and work in a block on a piece, but it does tend to get muddled up.
Well, long may that muddling up continue, as you put it. Will Todd, thank you so much for coming into Classic FM today and continued success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again for downloading the podcast this week. Charlotte Green will resume residency in the Culture Club this coming Sunday afternoon from 3:00.